Good evening and welcome to Slam the Gavel, the show that tells it all regarding family court, other court issues, as well as CPS. I am your host, Marianne Petrie. This episode of Slam the Gavel is sponsored by CPS Protect Consulting Services. Child Protective Services cases are among the most frightening experiences any parent can endure. Don't face them alone. With urgent assist by CPS Protect, you get the peace of mind to raise your children as you see fit. And the personalized assistance of their team of expert child welfare consultants, former CPS investigators themselves, right when you need it. Get started absolutely free at cpsprotect.com/register. And I have a brand new guest on. I have Ulysses Butch Slaughter on. He has his own podcast called Wise Counsel, and he has been the target of false allegations by his ex-wife in August of 2021. He is a journalist and instinctively recorded his eviction. He didn't release the footage until late July of 2023, and it went viral on TikTok and YouTube. I will put that link in the signature in the podcast notes. He's also advocated for and against many issues, and I will include all his websites and videos in the podcast notes. And he also has national forums that fall under the banner Stop False Allegations Against Men or hashtag STOPFAAM. And I will include all of this in the podcast notes. I'm very happy to have you on, Ulysses Butch Slaughter. Welcome to Slam the Gavel.
It's just such an honor to be here with you. As I listen to you talk and I start thinking about how I wound up here. It's certainly not funny, but it is just amazing how life twists and turns sometimes, and you don't realize where you're going, but you are right where you belong when you show up, and I'm happy to be here.
That's a good way to put it. Sometimes advocacy, you don't choose it; it chooses you.
Yeah, it chose me a long time ago, I think, and it's not unusual for me to be talking about allegations or what people loosely call abuse sometimes. Mm-hmm. This is something that I've been struggling with since my childhood. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up in a house where DV was very common, and ultimately took my mother's life. My father actually was convicted of taking my mother's life when I was 12 years old. And I wound up being the chief witness against my father at the age of 12.
Oh, and I'm so sorry.
Yeah, to wind up here today under these different circumstances, it just feels like this is my life. And I'm going to embrace it. And I'm going to embrace the opportunity to speak with you.
Well, I'm so glad you're here because we have a lot to learn from you about false allegations. And, you know, everyone wants to know, when will people be called out for calling in false allegations and accusations and ruining a person's life? When?
That really is the question, Marianne. I think that it is so easy for people to make allegations and not be held accountable for the allegations that they've made. And when they know that they are intentionally making an allegation that is false, to gain a foot up in a court situation. And I've talked to enough attorneys during this period of time. I've talked to enough men and women during this period of time to know that in many cases, it's a strategy, a false allegation. Mm-hmm. You know how ridiculous that sounds, even as I hear myself saying it?
No, it's not.
It is a strategy. So in order for us to win, we're going to have to lie. Mm. We're going to have to make up something in order for us to win. That is antithetical to justice. That is everything that justice is not supposed to be. That is everything that is not truth. Mm-hmm. But people walk into courtrooms every day and sit on a witness stand and perjure themselves. And nothing happens. Mm-mm. Nothing happens.
No, and it's horrible when you're sitting there watching someone lie on that witness stand and you're going, that never happened. I don't know what to say because your own attorney won't do anything about that either. You know what I
I know,
mean?
and that makes it tough too, that everybody acts like their hands are tied and acts like this is just the game that we have to play. And we're going to get passes, but we're going to have to let them lie. And we're going to have to figure out what to do after they lie. We're not going to address the lie. So again, it's a pleasure to be here, and I've had an opportunity to meet some wonderful people in this last, wow, 2 years now. As you said, I was evicted from my home on August the 4th, 2021. Beautiful home that I was evicted from in Media, Pennsylvania. And I'm a journalist by trade. And as it turns out, when I saw the state troopers coming up my driveway, and everything started to feel really fishy on that day. My ex-wife had been gone for like 3 days. She was sending me these really cryptic and strange texts. I had no idea that I was being baited with these texts. And so finally, somewhere in the afternoon of August the 4th, 2021, first of all, I was served with divorce papers. Served with divorce papers, and within like a half an hour, the state troopers were pulling into my driveway and telling me that I was going to be evicted. And as you said, it's on TikTok, it's on YouTube as well. And my journalism instinct told me to start recording it. So before I walked outside, I started recording, and I wound up recording about 20 minutes of my interaction with the state troopers. And I tell people that those state troopers were young enough to be my sons.
Yeah, isn't that
And
now?
yeah, and I felt so bad. You know, I felt bad for them to be put in this situation where, as people say, they're just doing their job. Nobody should be put in a position to enforce a lie. Nobody should be put in a position to have to go out and deal with a stranger, and like I said, enforce a lie. But they were the least of my challenges on that day. I was totally blown away, Mary, and I had no idea. I didn't see it coming. There are people that will say things like, you should have seen the signs. I've talked to enough men and women, and that we all can agree that in order for this to work, you're not supposed to see the signs. You're supposed to be loved right up into the moment that you get evicted. And in many ways, I was loved right up to the moment that I was evicted.
And it's so strange. Even in my case, I didn't see the red flags. Did you notice any red flags that you can recall?
I remember the strangeness of the last few days. Well, what happened was on July the 29th, my wife and I had a couple of conversations that were difficult conversations. Because of my history growing up with my mother and father, who were constantly yelling and physically fighting, I have always just kind of backed down. I've never been one to do a lot of yelling and screaming. It's just not my thing. I'll just leave. And so we had a couple of interactions, say the 28th, 29th of July. And they were just kind of arguments to me. And then later on in the evening of the 29th, I go to sleep. I want to go to sleep in the bedroom. I had stayed out of our bedroom for about 2 nights. So I go to sleep in the bedroom. I want to go to sleep in the bedroom. And my ex-wife tells me, "Don't come in here. You're not sleeping in here tonight." And I'm like, "Why not?" And she says, "Because the other day you got into the bed and tried to choke me and pull my hair." Now, let me back up just a little bit. When she told me, before she said that, she said, "If you don't leave the room, I'm going to call the police on you." I thought that was the most bizarre thing ever. You're going to call the police on me. I mean, it was such a sudden shift in our relationship that I felt like I was talking to somebody else. Now, I need to say this because it matters in a way. My ex-wife is white. Not only that, but she's a psychology professor,
Oh, there it is.
and she is also a former partner colleague of mine who regularly did all kinds of cultural safety workshops with me in the community that we serve. So we would go out and tell people how to deal with situations from a culture, race, social standpoint, social justice stuff. That is what we did. And so up until that day, that's who she was. And on the 29th, the evening of the 29th of July, when she said, "I will call the police on you," I was flabbergasted. And so what she did was she picked up her phone and she started to dial her mom. And I knew it was her mom because I could see, her mom came up on the phone. And so I'm thinking, I don't know what's going on here, so I better call somebody too. So I called a friend of mine, and her mother didn't answer, but my friend did answer as we're standing in the bedroom together. And I said, "Hey," my friend's name is Razan. I said, "Hey, Razan, you got to listen to this. I don't know what's going on here, but Pauline is threatening to call the police." And my ex-wife snatches the phone from me. And she says, "I told him to leave the bedroom. And if he doesn't leave, I'm going to call the police on him." And my friend says, "Why would you call the police on him? What's going on?" And she says, "The other day, he got into the bed and he pulled my hair and tried to choke me." And my friend said, "Are you sure about that?" Just absolutely bizarre. It was so bizarre and it felt so contrived. And at the same time, I just felt like I was talking to somebody else. So my friend said to me, she calls me Butch. She said, "Butch, leave the room and go someplace else." So I did. I left the room and I went downstairs and I called my daughter. My oldest daughter was living with us at the time. And I said, "Hey, I don't know what's going on. I'm not sure if I want to stay here tonight. I'm not sure what's going on with Pauline." And so when my daughter got home, we decided we were going to stay. I just didn't go back into the room. Next morning, my ex-wife gets up and she leaves. Now that's the 30th. She left on the 30th, July the 30th. She did not return until, I guess, after I was evicted, which was 5 days later. And in this period of time, she's sending me all of these cryptic texts. And finally, in one of the texts, she says, "My attorney will reach out to you." Now, Marianne, I had no reason to believe that she had actually filed for divorce. I thought she was having a nervous breakdown. I really did. I thought she was having a nervous breakdown. She had been sending me text weeks prior. So I'm trying to speak to the issue of the red flag thing. She had been sending me text about menopause and about perimenopause and about this thing called premenstrual dysphoric disorder. So I'm getting all of this stuff that I thought was to inform me around what she might be going through. And as I look back at it now, I feel like it was a form of gaslighting. I feel like what I was really being told was, "You're in trouble. You're in trouble, and here it comes." So, at some point, her attorney reached out to me. I think he finally reached out to me on the 3rd of August. That was the first time I had confirmation that she had actually filed for divorce. And then the next day was when I was served with the papers. And I'd say again, within like a half an hour of being served those papers, I was being evicted from the house. It was bizarre. It was
That is.
Twilight Zone. And we'd never had a conversation about divorce. Nothing transpired that had never transpired before. We did not keep a chaotic house. Oftentimes people will say things like it's his word against hers and that kind of thing. And there were plenty of people around who could attest, from our children to our neighbors, who could attest that there was nothing that could be seen that would make you think that they were living in any form of chaos or any form of deep conflict. But clearly something was going on in her world that I didn't know anything about. And it showed up for me on the 4th of August, 2021.
And it no one can understand this until it happens to them.
I totally agree. And it's frustrating, and sometimes it's insulting because people will say things like, You picked that person. You
Oh.
chose that person. You should have seen it coming. And it takes it gives no responsibility to the person who has decided to betray the covenant. It only takes one person to betray the covenant. And while some people would be thinking, hey, we're just working through a tough time, we're just working through a tough time, you don't realize the other person is done working. And if they don't say, I'm done working, if there's no conversation, that person, in some cases, in too many cases, can go file for a unilateral divorce, a unilateral filing for divorce, and it's over. And to make matters worse, it's not just about the divorce, it's about what people, many people now know as what they call the silver bullet strategy. And that strategy says, make a false claim, an allegation of abuse, and a judge will feel compelled to remove somebody from the house. I grew up in a home where real physical violence happened, real verbal violence happened. I believe that there are times when people need to be separated. If they don't know how to separate themselves, they should be separated. But I am very clear that this is being abused. These false allegations are a form of abuse. And that when people say things like, believe all victims, or we gotta err on the side of, well, we don't even know who the victim is in this situation because the abuser could be the one making the allegation. And that needs to be taken into account, that this person is the actual abuser who has decided to use a false allegation to punish the other person who's done nothing wrong. And it happens all day, every day, someplace.
And I think they're also projecting their problem and they're making it look like you're the one doing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is one of the things that I say in my forums about false allegations. I say the false allegation is designed to do four primary things. It's designed to discredit you. You are going to be discredited immediately. The whole thing of innocent until proven guilty doesn't work here. You're going to be discredited. And then the other thing that it's designed to do is to destabilize you. You're going to be destabilized, as in my case, you're going to be put out of your house. And so now you're going to have to regain your balance. So we're going to discredit you. We're going to destabilize you. We're going to disorient you. And I was very disoriented because I could not understand psychologically, emotionally, what in the world was going on here. What do you, what happened? And then the last thing I talk about is that it's designed to depress you. It's designed to sink you into a place where you feel weak, where you feel hopeless, where you don't, where you don't want to do anything, and you start to ruminate. And there are a few other D's like disillusion, but those are the four things that I think about. It's designed to discredit you. When somebody points a finger at you and says, you did this, you're already on the defensive. You're on the defensive. Now you got to explain, I didn't do it. You got to explain that you didn't do something that you didn't do. That's a tough thing to do. But then, like I said, you're destabilized. So you're out of your home. Now you've got to figure out how to, if you don't have the money to deal with it, you got to figure out how to get the money because the person who did this is steps ahead of you in most cases. Steps ahead of you. They've already talked to their attorney. They could be months, if not years, ahead of you. I'd venture to say my ex-wife was at least months ahead of me, that this was something that she had figured out months ahead of time. Disorient and depress. It's a very, very, it can be a very, very dark place to have to live when you go through something like this.
A lot of people go through this and they are not understanding that these courtrooms and these exes are ex displaying sociopathic behaviors by inflicting this onto someone in the silver bullet process. Does that
I'm
make
so
sense?
glad you said that. Absolutely. I'm glad you said that. I mean, I think there's a collective, I'll call it mindset, but there's a culture of punishment against somebody who just somebody just made an allegation against him. Just an allegation. And what's really bad, and I my guess is that you've probably seen a video about an assistant district attorney named Leslie Levy out of Williamson, Texas. It's that video where you see her essentially training people on how to use false allegations. I put that up. Yeah, Jeff Morgan, who I know you know Jeff Morgan. Jeff Morgan was a guest on my recent forum, but we talked about that video that people need to understand that false allegations are part of the so-called legal process that judges know, attorneys know. The people that don't know are the people that get hurt, like me and you. We don't know that this is actually a setup. You have no clue when you see it happening. You know something is going on, but the courtrooms hold space for this cruelty. That's the best way I can put it. They hold space for this cruelty, yet we're supposed to be in the halls of justice. It makes no sense. It's so unfair, and so many people are hurt by this. That's part of the work that I'm doing right now with a number of other people. You've heard the name Robert Garza, who had built Time Taking Time Back.
Oh, yes, that was
Part
excellent.
of his bill, yeah, part of his bill looks at getting time back when you have been away from your children, and also seeks to penalize people who make false allegations. I want to find a way to deal with false allegations where children are not involved, but divorce is involved. People should not be able to make false allegations to get an advantage, to punish the other person so that they can win in court. There are rarely winners in court.
No, there are no winners. Even if they're making a false allegation, these people are not happy people.
No.
So they may have beat you in court, but in my opinion, God's already dealing with them.
I agree. I totally agree. I want to mention that I was given a 6 month protection from abuse. I went into court because, again, Marianne, I was convinced that my wife was having a nervous breakdown, that something was going on that I just didn't understand. So I didn't even hire a lawyer. I went into court and attempted to defend myself because I just didn't want any more conflict. And I'm thinking, I don't want to hire somebody to beat my wife up. I had no idea that she had made up her mind that this was the route she was taking and that she was serious about getting rid of me. And so the judge issued a what she called a cooling off period, a 6 month cooling off period. So I was put out of the house for 6 months. And because, again, lawyers know where what their strategies are, what their options are, that gave her attorney an opportunity to file for exclusive possession of the house through the divorce, which meant that even when the 6 months was up, I was not going to be allowed to go back into the home. Now, one of my attorney consultants said, even if they let you go back into the house, don't, because if she made that up, she'll make up something else. So they were right. And even if I could have, I wouldn't have. But it's such, again, it's such a cruel thing to do to people who don't deserve this level of. It's just mean. That's just the best way I could. It's just so mean to do this to somebody. And when I realized what was going on going into May, I filed a lawsuit against my wife. And that lawsuit was recently, it has taken us 2 years. It took us 2 years to finalize the divorce, which is really just sad because all of the money, all the resources, all of the tension, all of that stuff only equals pain. It's just a bunch of pain. But I wound up having to file a lawsuit for breach of contract. And I'm grateful to say that that lawsuit, even though she attempted many times to have my lawsuit dismissed, that the court is going to hear my lawsuit
Oh, good.
and they're going to hear my claim, and that I will have an opportunity to go back and show how all of this stuff, the false allegation, all of that stuff, was contrived. It was all contrived to defraud me out of my home. And so, I always wish I could say this stuff with as much clarity as possible. But when I reflect on it as I'm sitting here talking with you now, it's not a place I want to be. This is not the place I want to be. But since I'm here, I want to be able to help first. I want to be able to help as many men as possible. And I want to say that with an understanding that by helping the men that I'm helping, I am helping their mothers. I am helping their daughters. I am helping their aunts. I'm helping their grandmothers. I'm helping women by helping men. So this is not a man versus woman thing. This is, people will say often that 80% of divorces today are filed by women. That is what people say.
I did it.
You did it?
I had to.
Yeah, I mean, but I think, I mean, that there's certainly different circumstances. And I'm certainly not lumping all of the 80% into a particular category. What I am saying is that men are often attacked with divorces. They are attacked. They don't see it coming. And I believe that by helping men be better men and recover from these types of things, we're helping entire communities. Men live in houses with families and communities, and when they are hurt, their families are hurt, their communities are hurt. And so my work with Stop False Allegations Against Men is about bringing resources to men so they can better understand and they can better recover. Because I've met men who have had some really mean things done to them. Really, really mean things done with to them. And of course, I've heard of men who have taken their own lives as a result of going through the court system, not being able to see their children, being falsely accused of things. It's,
Or they're
it can
sitting in prison.
or they're sitting in prison. Thank you. Yep. Yep. This is an ugly reality that I appreciate you providing the platform to talk about this. We need more platforms to, excuse me, to talk about this, because I still think that it is a hidden evil in many
Yes.
ways. People think that the courtrooms are halls of justice, and I know that they can be, but I also know that they can be something else too.
Well, that was well said because everyone goes in there thinking, oh, this is where justice takes place.
Right.
We were brainwashed with that idea since we were little kids.
Right.
And then you go in there. And it's always the opposing attorney calls out the false allegation, the silver bullet. In my case, she's crazy and she's alienating the kids, and they run
Right.
with it. People need to know that as soon as that opposing attorney calls it out, they run with it.
Yep. And it's just, it's sad the way that adults operate and totally forget that we are adding to the pain and the chaos of this world. I sometimes I watch our country. I'm a veteran, by the way, and I only say that because I watch the way that our leaders struggle to support issues all around the world. They want to fund all kinds of issues all around the world. And I struggle with some of that because I watch the way that families are treated. I look at the resources that are lacking when it comes to helping families, and more attention needs to be paid to this issue. You're probably familiar with the name Stephen Baskerville.
Yes.
So I've been in communication with him. I'd like to get him on into one of my upcoming forums. But when he talks about unilateral divorce, when he talks about the court system, when he talks about the way this machine of madness is impacting our lives, we don't hear about the machine of madness on the nightly news. We don't. We hear about all kinds of stuff, but we don't hear about what's going on in the county courthouse. What's going on in family court? We don't hear this stuff. We don't understand it. We just assume, like you said, that justice is being done there and all kinds of injustice is going on there.
Right, it's a very scary place, and people don't realize that when you walk in with your attorney, you're actually admitting that you are not, how do I say it, mentally stable to run your own case. That's why you're hiring this guy.
Right.
Which is sad. That's why I ended up going pro se, because you run out of money fast.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And that's kind of why I went in pro se the first time. I thought, oh, things will be just fine. I'm going to go in there and they're going to listen to me and they're going to see that I would never do anything like this. And I think I got the best outcome that I could have gotten. And still, the amount of pain that I had to endure, the amount of pain that my children endured, I wound up getting arrested one night for sending an email that was being challenged by my ex-wife's attorney as he said that I had broke the protection from abuse order, that I had violated it. And so state troopers show up at my home. I wind up in handcuffs. I've never been in handcuffs in my life. Never been in jail in my
Sorry.
life.
Oh my God. It's
I
just,
can say I have too now.
oh yeah, see.
I now I
Oh.
can say no, I've been in handcuffs before, but when I think about why, I'm going, this is out of control.
It is, yes.
And the false allegations are out of control. There's got to be a way to look at false allegations and say, well, if you're going to make that accusation and there is a divorce that is under review right now, we've got to we're going to have to take this allegation of abuse out of family court and we're going to have to give it to criminal court.
Thank you.
We can't let you do that because we understand that this is what people do. They make an allegation of abuse and they say that they're afraid when they're going through the divorce process. So we're going to have to pause the divorce process and handle this. And when we're done over here, we'll come back over here. But they allow it to all take place in the same venue. And it's just not fair. It seems like a no-brainer to me.
Right. Because the judges are using their own discretion. They're not
Their own
really following
discretion.
law.
And what is it? The preponderance of law, right? The
Right.
preponderance of the evidence, as opposed to beyond a reasonable doubt.
Correct. Right. And the thing is, these what the taxpayer doesn't understand is when these people continuously make these false allegations and run people into a courtroom, this is at taxpayer expense. Every time
Yes.
they call the police and have
Yes.
them at your doorstep, this is at taxpayer expense,
Yes.
and they should be fined for making these allegations.
I agree. They should be fined. One of the things that I've done, I have these forums on a monthly basis because there are people who have come up with different strategies for dealing with false allegations. I remember going to the protection from abuse hearing, and I looked across the room, and there was a representative from the local domestic abuse project there. And that person was sitting with my ex-wife for support. Now, this is a nonprofit organization. They get nonprofit dollars, for lack of a better way of putting it. But they're supporting somebody who's making a false allegation. So recently I visited the Domestic Abuse Project and I told them that I want my name removed from any records that you may have. If my name is associated with anything that says that I was an abuser, I want it out of your records. And I have been pushing them through letters. I've sent two letters and I've copied a number of people who you would probably know, I'm sure. I've copied them and said, hey, the Domestic Abuse Project needs to be held accountable for supporting false allegations. They too need to scrutinize this a little bit better because people who really need their help aren't getting it because people who don't need their help are abusing their resources.
Very, very true.
And I'm going to go to the state trooper's office and I'm going to file a complaint for the complaint that was filed against me. There has to be a response to this stuff if it's going to stop. And people are going to have to put their behinds on the line for what they believe in whatever way they can, in order for this to stop. Because too many people are getting hurt with false allegations. It's comical. It's like a circus, but there's nothing fun about this circus.
Oh, yeah. You know, my dad said, one day you'll look back at this and laugh. I mean, I guess the only way I can do that is through this podcast when I get my little jabs in. That's about it. Like
Yeah, because,
you lost everything. And I
yes.
was going to ask you, when you went to the DV place, did they take your name off of anything or not?
I've written to the executive director and to the president of their board. I just sent them another message last night. And so I'm still waiting to hear from them. I sat down with one of their workers, had a conversation with her, asked her, I said, what are the chances that my name is in one of your files listed as a defendant? And she said, very good. And so that's when I wrote to the executive director and I wrote to the president. And I said, if my name is there, I want it off. And if we can't have a conversation about this, I'm going to find some way to have a conversation with you about my name and your files as a defendant. It was ruled, my ex-wife's claims were ruled as unfounded. They were unfounded. And I say to people again that these terms that we use sometimes are so nebulous, they don't get to the heart of it. If it was founded, if I was found to have done something wrong, I would be punished. What happens when it's unfounded? You know, like, some people say it can't be that black and white. Somehow or another, I need to be relieved of this label that you've tried to put on me. Because again, if I had done something wrong, I'd be punished. But what happens when you don't find anything? There's no answer for that. There needs to be an answer for that.
And people also need to know that, like in your situation and in my situation, even if you are exonerated of whatever charge was placed on you, that judge, be it family court judge or civil court, I can't speak to civil court, I can only speak to family court, but they will still run with the ball that you were abusive.
That's correct. That's correct. And if anybody that you know hears anything like that, if your coworkers, your community people hear it, anybody who hears anything like that, you'll be getting a side eye for a long time. People will be looking at you because, again, as I said a while back, the allegation is designed to discredit you above and beyond the court. And your destabilization is in relationship to your relationships also. You wind up walking around like a pariah. People are looking at you like he or she was charged with some form of abuse. And it's like, no, it's not true. And when people hear the word abuse, it's all encompassing.
It
You
is.
did everything that abuse can possibly be. And I'm like, no, that's not what happened.
I know.
This is what happened. So the cruelty of it is more comprehensive than I think people could know. And it's kind of like what you said, and that is, unless you've lived through it, you don't get it. Robert Garza, a guy who was falsely accused 43 times and had to deal with court for 12 years, I can only imagine what that was like for him. When I think about my situation, I'm like, I know how bad this hurt me. And I know that there are other people out there that are hurting.
It makes you wonder at with 43 accusations at taxpayer expense, don't you think a judge would get it after the second one?
I would think so. I'll even let you get four. I'll give you four out of 43. But after four, come on.
Exactly.
Come on. I mean, and your dad said hopefully you'll live one day to laugh about this.
I don't know.
To keep from crying, right?
I guess so. I lost my nursing career of 23 years. But I met people like you and other people I've had on this podcast. I've actually met more nice people through this tragedy than I have ever met as a nurse.
I say the same thing, that the people that I've met on this path are some of the most courageous people, people of incredible integrity, people with incredible fight. I've seen you interview people like Jim Sisko, Bill Corbett. I could, again, name some other people who I've been in communication with and who I've done some work with. And I'm proud to be amongst this group because I believe it is this group. This generation is going to see a change to this in the same way that Robert Garza was able to put forth the taking time back bill. Some bill is going to emerge from this. And anybody who has lodged a false allegation needs to be held accountable for that allegation that they lodged. You can't just go around lying on people and ruining people's lives and walking away from it with a shoulder shrug. It's not fair. It's criminal, in fact.
I also interviewed Carnell Smith, and he said basically the same thing. He's been in court with someone and they found it to be a false allegation, and that person just gets up and walks out like nothing
Right.
happened. And
Right.
this other person is left crumpled up in a ball. This is just absolutely cruel to do to anyone. This goes back to the Salem witch trials.
I agree. I agree. And I think that the court has to take responsibility for it because the court is the container in which this is allowed to happen. So to point at the individual who's making the allegation is one thing, but for the court to not have figured out, for policymakers to not have figured out how to deal with that, to prevent it. I heard Jeff Morgan say this. He says, when somebody comes in here with a false allegation, they are wasting taxpayer dollars. They are wasting resources, good resources, for people who are actually being harmed out there. They are constipating the pipeline of justice.
I like
We
how you
can't allow that to happen. We got to get those people out of it. We got to keep them from going into that pipeline, so that people who need to be in there can get what they need.
That I agree with that. That was well said. Because while the state police were coming to evict you, I'm sure there was some woman getting beat up, having her purse taken away, and then she fell on the sidewalk and broke her hip, right? So they missed out on that while they
They
were
missed out.
evicting
That's
you.
right. That's right. They missed out on that. And there's a way that it has to do damage to their mental health as well. So let's say that they didn't miss anything else, but that they had to engage this situation. It's not fair to them to be put in that situation where they have to feel the energy of something like that. Their mental health, we should be concerned, just as concerned with their mental health as we are concerned with everybody else involved. We should not put them in that, and that's why I was saying earlier about the way that we use our resources overseas. We don't send people into combat. We don't send people into danger if we don't have to. And in cases like these, we don't have to. We got to be a lot more shrewd when it comes to figuring out how to do that. And my forums that I do on a monthly basis are designed to do that. We got to have conversations about how to make these things, how to change these things. We don't have conversations, we don't get the conversions, and we need the conversions. We got to get away from this space because this space is crippling us right now as a society.
And I'm really glad you came on to discuss this because this has weighed heavily on me as well. And I've had guests on this beginning of this year, even talking about false allegations. So this must be the year, I'm thinking.
I think you're right, Marianne. I really do. And I'm going to do everything that I can to push this issue because there's got to be a tipping point where truth becomes the marker again, where fairness becomes the way that we do things. You don't get to lie for your individual advantage because the individual that does that is in opposition to the entire society of truth. Again, it's not just about the as they call it, the respondent in the they call it the plaintiff. What's the respondent? I can't think of the other name that they use, but you got the plaintiff and the defendant. If the plaintiff is not being honest, that plaintiff is in opposition to all the truth that all the rest of us share. And that plaintiff is taking from everybody, not just the individual that they're in some kind of conflict with. You just don't get to do that. And I hope you're right. I hope this is the year.
I hope.
I'm gonna speak it into being. This is the year. I said that at the beginning of the year. This is the year when this changes. And I'm gonna do everything I can to make sure it happens.
You know, how can people reach you? If they have any questions.
My website, I've got two websites. One is UlysseesButchSlaughter.com. And then the other is we have stop, stopfaam.com. Call it stopfam.com. And you can reach me at stopfam@gmail.com. And like you probably do, I get messages all day, every day, from somebody who is saying that happened to me, or can you talk with me? The sadness can be overwhelming sometimes. The things that people do to other people, I don't get it. I hope I never understand why people do some of the things that they do. My brain will never comprehend it.
I interviewed Judge Mary Elizabeth Bullock, and she said one in 30 are sociopaths. I think this is the problem.
Wow.
Then one of my other guests says she thought it was one in 20. So, well, we'll say one in 25 are sociopaths. I would have to go along with that.
Which makes me wonder, and I'm sure somebody else can speak a lot better to this, if sociopaths are a product of their environment, the question sometimes I hear, are we just now coming to an understanding and it's the way it's always been, or are we actually nurturing, for lack of a better term, sociopaths? Are we actually, with, of course, social media and, all of the individualism, the hyper individualism and the likes and the hearts and all of that, are we actually creating that?
I think the
I
school
don't know.
started. I think, you know what? When you say that, I think the school started it first. Everybody has to have a trophy. I mean, you can't have just Johnny winning because he worked really hard to earn the trophy.
Right.
We're going to have
Yeah.
everybody get the trophy.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's so very unrealistic. But you're right. Excuse me.
Well, I'd like to have you come back on and we can chat some more about this type of thing.
Well, you can count on me coming back on. We talked about doing this for 45 minutes and I looked up and it was 1:53 and I'm
Oh,
like,
is
we're just getting, no, but I'm just saying, well, I've got time. We're just getting started. I feel like I just kind of relieved myself and now I really want to talk about some things. But I think the point we've made is the point that needs to continue to be made, and that is that false allegations have to be challenged. Perjury is a crime. It needs to be punished. And there's got to be a formula to look at false allegations. And so people will know if you do this, these are the consequences of a false allegation. You need to know that if you can't, if you allege something and you can't prove it, the burden of proof is on you. If you can't prove it, you're going to pay court cost. You're going to pay for something. But you just can't call people in here. And I don't believe that it will stop people who are really being hurt from coming forward. I refuse to believe that. People who are really being hurt are always going to come forward. But people who have not been hurt should not be able to inflict punishment on someone because they're trying to get an advantage over that person. That's a model that we have to get rid of. And that is the model right now.
And I think we should also get rid of some of these sociopathic judges who will tell a litigant that you can't call CPS because if you do, I'm going to put you in jail. And
Agreed.
these judges don't look at evidence. We all know it.
And it's interesting that that you would say that because I find that some of these judges want to be just like some of the attorneys, their egos become really big in court. They become gods or goddesses in court. And I'm thinking, no, you're a judge. You're supposed to have an, that's why we say your honor. You're
Oh,
supposed
I no,
honorable.
right.
You're supposed to be honorable. And honorable, a big part of being honorable is being humble. That's what makes you honorable, is that you're humble. You know that you are here to serve us. It's not the other way around.
Oh, but
So,
them. Oh, we're going to have an excellent podcast next time, I'm
I
telling
can't wait.
you.
I can't wait. Thank you
Well,
so much for having me.
don't jump off, okay?
All right.
Slam the Gavel is a podcast to help the public understand what really goes on in these family courtrooms. I am your host, Marianne Petry, author of Dismantling Family Court Corruption, Why Taking the Kids Was Not Enough, and Cry Out for Justice, Poems of Truth, and Raised by These Wolves, How Family and Federal Courts Are Failing Our Children. You can find me on Spotify, YouTube, Apple iTunes, Anchor FM, iHeartRadio, and other platforms I don't even know about. And please feel free to buy me a coffee to help keep this podcast going. And you can find that in the podcast notes. Thank you, Ulysses Butch Slaughter. Thank you so much for your input on all of this.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to us doing this again.
We will.